Hello friends and welcome to another edition of the Kings of Anglia podcast. Can we still call it Kings of Anglia?
They're not down yet. Yeah. We'll address this in the summer.
Issue there.
It wasn't the best idea for our that brand to
that
be launched of breast time, was it?
Yeah.
Princes of Anglia?
Princes of Anglia? Something?
Paupers.
Ooh, that's going to sting. I'm your host, Mark Heath, as ever, and with me, as ever, fresh, if that's the right word, from Accrington, Stuart Watson.
Hello.
Steve, how are you?
I'm all right, yeah, good.
Excellent. And Mr. Hutch, Andy Warren.
Mr. Hutch, fresh is not the word. I don't feel fresh.
And no.
You can't possibly feel fresh, Stu.
No, I was in the office yesterday as well, so...
Should just explain, this is Stewie's Friday today. Stewie works Saturday and Sunday, so a little insight into your future. You'd have to drive yourselves to Accrington on Saturday.
Yeah, tiny violins playing now.
In a...
drive ourselves?
Well, normally you've got a driver, haven't you? I mean...
Yeah.
But yeah. Should explain that your driver actually couldn't fit in the press box at Accrington. There's not enough space for more than two of you to go. So you have to take yourselves off down the motorway. 5 hours, was it?
Something like that, yeah.
Cover Accrington, cover the grimly predictable defeat at Accrington. And then Stu was in the office most of the day yesterday, penning various bits.
Mm.
And he's back fresh this morning. As he came in this morning, he said, yes, let's talk more about Ipswich Town, which is exactly what we're going to do now. So, chaps, other than, obviously, Stu, you've been working all weekend, but before we get into the horrible, boring, depressing, upsetting football...
Mark, I've got nothing to tell you about my life. We sat down and did one of these when? Friday?
Yeah.
Since Friday, I've been to Accrington and back, and then I was in the office all day yesterday.
It's not all about you, Stewie.
Now it's Monday morning.
I've not got an awful lot more to add. I did indeed wake up on Sunday morning.
Good news.
Quite early.
Yeah.
Took my daughter to the supermarket. Came home.
Good. Excellent.
Looked
after her. You're the man that's been off all weekend. Have you been doing?
What have I been doing? Saturday morning, I sparred a 25-stone powerlifter. That was an interesting experience. It's a bit like the scene in Game of Thrones, you know, the mountain and the viper. I didn't have a trident. It's like fighting a wall.
Did you kill him?
No.
Oh.
No. Luckily, he's quite early on in his martial arts journey. So he's still kind of learning the basics. But yeah, he's going to be trouble. He's 160 kilos, which means he's more than well over twice my weight.
Can you play centre forward?
Yeah.
Ipswich needs size and strength, Mr. Lambert says.
Yes, he's certainly got size and strength. I'm not sure about manoeuvrability, but yeah, a couple of times he just sort of bull rushed me and swatted me like a fly. That was good fun. And in other news, I'm a vegetarian again for the next week or so. Yesterday, I had a minestrone soup homemade. We counted it 10 portions of fruit and veg. Well, mostly veg.
Yeah, so what fruit's got in there?
Yeah, at some point I'm expecting probably to soil myself today with all that, added fibre and nutrition. Okay, so general
that's
banter.
Something to look forward to.
General banter cut short by both of you. Good. Let's go on to the football then.
Doesn't feel the right time for general banter.
Well, because
we have black
the
black
football.
She's wearing a black shirt.
She's entirely clad in black
morning.
So let's talk about it then. Obviously, Accrington lost. Town haven't won an FA Cup game since 2010. There have been like three World Cup finals since then. Three prime ministers. Stu had hair last time Town won an FA Cup
Loads
game.
Loads of hair, yeah.
Had a full head of hair, boy band style.
Too much, if anything.
Hutch was but a teenager.
Is that right?
No.
But quite close.
No, that's not absolutely not. I was like 24.
Yeah, and I was working on news. The last time Town won an FA Cup game, but it
I'd
was
have been Birmingham in 2010.
Did you? Good times.
Yeah, it was good times.
It was, as I say, grimly predictable. I know we all, or certainly both of you, predicted a win, but I think that was more out of hope.
I didn't.
Didn't you?
No. Stupid. You remember I said it?
Oh, you predicted a draw.
I said it would be a replay.
Hutch predicted 3-1.
Do you know what else Stu predicted? Once Jordan Spence had eased his man to the floor, Stu just leant over. Ever so casually, he said, by the way, this is when they score. And then they did.
Nice.
He saw it coming.
So it's my fault, basically.
The writing was on the wall.
Mm.
Chaps, over to you. What did we make of the debacle, the shambales? What more can we say, really? Stu's head is actually in his hands as I'm asking this question.
Can we start with the positive part which I really liked Accrington as a football club. It was a lovely experience. Everybody was very friendly. There was a good vibe. There was a band playing at the end.
What was the Wham Stadium like? Was it nice?
Picturesque? Yeah. With the hills in the background?
Yeah, sort of non-league. You might have seen a few of the pictures or a bit of the footage. I know there were streams knocking about online. You naughty people who watched that. Yeah, it's kind of set in the hills, isn't it? You could see behind the away end with all the terracing, just non-league sort of style with terracing, and the town fans had the rolling hills behind them. As Andy says, it was felt proper.
We should also say, and we touched on this last podcast about people going to Middlesbrough, that was there 1,500 fans or something at Accrington?
48% of the attendance.
Exactly, which is incredible. Town. I mean, fantastic. And they deserve better, don't they? Than going all that way and watching their team limp out the FA Cup again.
No excuses on this occasion. We've been talking about they've been playing good football and they've not had the breaks and refereeing decisions and not taking chances, but the football's been really good. And this was a mid-table League One side that are playing at that level for the first time in their history. They'd been beaten 4-0 and 3-0 in their previous two games. Mm. Ipswich bought two of their supposedly best players off of them in the summer. Man for man, Ipswich should have been a better side, and they weren't. And the bookies were proven right. Accrington were made the favourites, and they won the game, and they deserved to win the game. And first half, it was all Accrington, wasn't it? Three saves from Barr, a couple of big blocks from NCR, a header that went wide. For a long period in this game, the closest Ipswich came to scoring was a header home that almost caught the goalkeeper out. Yeah. I mean, that told you everything, really. And Lambert was right afterwards. It came down purely to desire on this occasion, and one team wanted it more.
It wasn't even upset, though, was it? That's the thing. Like, I was listening to it on the radio while I was doing my hoovering. It's Mark's time to shine the hoovering around the house. And they were saying the first cut to was about 15 minutes in. The guy said, it's been all Accrington. And he said it wouldn't even be an upset. He said, I don't know which way around it'd be an upset if whoever wins this game, because Town's record is dreadful. There's only, 12 places between them actually in the actual pyramid.
What radio station are you listening to?
Right, Five Live, my friend.
You've not got the full game. You don't want the full game experience from BBC Suffolk.
No.
Didn't fancy that.
No. I like to have an overview as to what's going on around the country, my friend. So that's what I do on a Saturday, a little insight into my life on a Saturday afternoon.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
They had some chances late to rescue what would have been a fortunate replay, which I'm not sure they would have escaped the verbal volleying that they had from their manager afterwards, even if they had managed to rescue that replay. Must be said, Freddie Sears, the guilty party again, second game in a row, missing a couple of chances that you need your forward players to be scoring if you're in Ipswich's position. But for the first hour of the game, with Caden Jackson as the lone striker, they really struggled to make anything click in that final third, didn't they? He just doesn't suit that role. And that's not being overly critical of him, really. But he just doesn't suit it.
Doesn't play to his strengths, does it? He's an on-the-shoulder pace merchant who can run the channels and do the high press. And we've seen the ability with the goal he scored against Millwall as well, but they need somebody for that system to work that holds the ball up and brings the midfield and the wide men into play. And I thought Ellis Harrison was excellent for a large part against Millwall, and I thought this was the type of game that was crying out for him.
Those chances came in the 10 minutes that he was on, those Sears chances. He makes those chances. Ipswich are a much better team when he's the central striker in that team.
Mm. Lambert's been talking about sort of physicality and the lack of it. He's not the biggest Harrison, but he wins his fair share of headers, and he can hold the ball up. Mm. And you know, it was a like-for-like replacement. Keane for Jackson, fair enough. He wants to look at his new signing. I'm not convinced Keane is really a target man type. I think, you know, despite being quite big in size, I think he's more of a neat footwork and that type of player. Finally went with two up front in the last 10 minutes, and as Andy says, it's no coincidence that's when those late chances came.
What do we make of the two new signings, Elder and Keane?
Keane didn't do an awful lot, I didn't think. How long did he get? 25? Something like that. He didn't do an awful lot. But Elder looked okay. He looked solid enough without you know, he didn't overly threaten going forward, but he looked solid enough, didn't
he? Yeah, tidy, crisp in everything he did. I thought he was one that came away with a few plaudits.
Now then, speaking of plaudits, the opposite. For the first time after the game, we saw angry Lambo, or you saw angry Lambo. He was quite outspoken after the game, wasn't he? He's normally full of praise for his players, but it was quite the opposite this time, essentially saying they were just not good enough. Some of them are going to get shipped out, by the sound of it. Thoughts on that?
It's a very stark change, isn't it? But you probably also get the feeling that that's not the first time the Ipswich players have heard that. That's the first time that's maybe even been said publicly. He said himself, didn't he, that I'll always tell the players the truth. I probably won't always tell you, the media, the truth. And I'm sure this wasn't the first game where the players were told that what they produced wasn't up to the mark.
You're right, it's a stark change in terms of what Lambert's saying publicly. You know, the boys gave me everything, 100%, they're my team, I'm sticking with them. And then as the weeks have gone by, it's I need a few signings, then it was I need half a dozen signings, then I need to strengthen all areas of the team. You know, and for the first time publicly he said there's players that aren't good enough here, and I know in my mind which ones aren't part of the plans going forwards. I think some people interpreted that as there's going to be a load shipped out this month. That's not going to happen because they can't afford to do it. You know, they haven't got a big enough squad to do that. But
can we speculate about some of those players might be that aren't good enough?
I don't think Gwion Edwards has shown Paul Lambert an awful lot so far. We've seen more of Gwion Edwards than Paul Lambert has, probably.
What's happened to Gwion Edwards?
Looked a shadow of
the tremendous at the start of the season, wasn't he? I mean, he was the one kind of bright spot at the start of the season, taking people on. Exciting, and he's just gone to other way, has he?
His first touch has disappeared, hasn't it? And with that first touch going, so does the threat of taking a good first touch and then having a go at your man. If you're not sort of getting the ball under control and getting yourself on the front foot, which is what players like Bersant Salina did so well, and what kind of masked his quieter displays was the fact that his first touch was good and always positive, even if it didn't lead to anything. Like, Gwion just doesn't have that at the moment.
I think even in the first months of the season when he was so exciting, part of the excitement was you never sensed he fully had the ball under control, but do you know what I mean? But he always seemed to find a way to get past his man, and now he just doesn't have the ball under control. That's the difference. And, you know, there was a moment, I think, midway through the first half where he got the ball in a good position and you think, go on then, have a go at him. And he kind of got his legs in a bit of a tangle and ended up sort of slipping. The pitch probably didn't help. And you thought, it's going to be one of those days. And that kind of set in stone the narrative that was going to unfold, really.
So Edwards wasn't impressive and potentially could be one of the players that Lambo was talking about. How about any others? Jordan Spence? Was he potentially one of those?
Gave away the free kick again. It was a bit needless, we thought at the time, didn't we? Just a bit clumsy. Limbs kind of flying where they didn't need to go at times. And that's not the first time that's happened in the last 2 months.
Lambert's talking about we keep giving away soft, silly free kicks, which is given they're a team that's really struggled to defend set pieces. And I have to say, Spence seems to be very much top of the scapegoat list, shall we say, amongst Ipswich fans at the moment. And I have an element of sympathy to a point, because I think he's had games under Lambert where his general play has been okay, he's been quite assured, he's tried to get forwards. But I think there's two things he keeps giving away. When he makes an error, it tends to be a catastrophic error, and he's not helped by the fact that his team then don't defend the subsequent corner, free kick, whatever it may be. And he just looks like he's got a lack of urgency about him at times. He's a little bit languid. There was, you know, I look back at the goal from Middlesbrough where, okay, he was up the pitch in the first place trying to attack and they countered, but does he look like he's really busting a gut to get back and get back into position at times? I'm not so sure. I think he's, in Lambert's mind, he's the only right back option because he's Danasian as a centre back. Whether we agree with that or not, I don't happen to agree with that, because I think Danasian has shown that he can be a more than solid right back in those early few weeks of the season. But Lambert's decided he's not, so in his mind Spence is the only one, but I think he'll be looking to change that going forward.
Yeah, Janoi was at Accrington where there were chance of, like, people, he was sort of talking to his old Accrington teammates after the game, and the Accrington fans were like, kidnap him, bring him back, get him back on loan.
Really?
It is puzzling.
Yeah.
The whole Danasian situation is puzzling, because like Stu says, he had games earlier in the season where he played really well.
He was just getting to kind of that level, wasn't it? I remember you were saying, was it after the Villa game where he did well against the Doma?
Yeah.
And you were saying how well he was doing and how impressed you were with him, and then he kind of vanished out of the team. And he's not really been seen that much since, has he?
He started the game at left back at Swansea under Hurst in the win there. And he kind of got run ragged a little bit. And ultimately, the goal kind of came down his side in the first half. And he got hooked at half time. And Hurst was saying that he was ill and was injured and stuff. But since then, have we seen him at all?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't... Don't think so at all, probably since then. I wouldn't go overboard in terms of how well he'd done. I thought he had some good games. I thought he had some games where you thought, okay, he's still adjusting to this level of football. But so was everyone else, to be fair. And I think given, when you take into account all of the circumstances, that he was stepping up a level, he was in an inexperienced team, and I thought he'd shown more than enough signs, especially now that, you know, Spence is having a bit of a wobble. I think, you know, he had enough credit in the bank to be given a chance again now.
So is that Lambert cutting his nose off a little bit there?
Possibly.
Over principle, sticking... No problem if he thinks he's a better central defender than a right back. No problem with that at all. But we have seen that he can do a job at right back. And when that's an area of the pitch where it's quite clear, could use a bit of help. Strange to me that we've not seen him.
I mean, he sees them in training all day, each week. Maybe he's basing it upon that. We don't know. But
any other notes from Accrington before we move on to the
notes from Accrington?
We got to talk about the Downs yellow card and subsequently going off
on the radio. So it should have been red.
It was very silly.
There's an argument for that. He lost his head. That situation had been brewing for a little while. I don't know what's been said out there. I don't know whether Accrington, there was a game plan there to kind of get in his ear and wind him up a little bit, but you could see the steam sort of emerging from his ears leading up to that. The ball's dead. I think he's leaning over the ball, ready to take a free kick, and he gets a little playful tap on the chin, bit naughty, bit of provocation, but the reaction to it was well overblown. A big shove in the chest, up round the neck area, right in front of the ref. Perhaps fortunate to get a yellow, and that kills his game. Flynn Downs' game is based on tenacity and flying into tackles, and Lambert had to hook him at half time because he was a walking red card, and all of a sudden that leaves a team lacking in physicality, looking a little bit lightweight in midfield when Bishop comes on to play alongside Dizel and Nolan.
Yeah, Bishop, Dizel and Nolan isn't a midfield that's going to win you the ball back. To play, you need to have the ball to play, and if you can't win it back,
you've
got nothing to build on, nothing to work on.
Should just mention that when you arrived at Accrington, there was a little special welcome for our friend Dr. Watson. You were telling me earlier, a few town fans, you alluded to it, Andy, on your hard man post match video when you were wearing no coat whatsoever, and indeed nothing, it seemed,
topless.
At first glance.
Topless post-match video.
Was covered up to the nines.
I can confirm that Andy's jumper was a sort of a red, a pale red colour, almost pink.
I'd call it a salmon.
Yeah.
But at first glance, it did look as if you were topless.
A topless man with no nipples was the response on Twitter.
And you were angry as well. But anyway, on that video, go and watch it, by the way, on Facebook, Kings of Anglia Facebook, if you've not seen it, or online. Andy revealed that Steve, was given a special serenade.
It was
into the ground as you
were.
Just describe the scene. You were saying earlier, you're in the office murk, which you had for the day.
Yeah, first of all, because I'm a bit concerned that people have seen us pull up in a murk and thought, oh, he's doing a bit well for himself.
Really big
balls. I'm not.
Yeah.
That is a company car. And also, why do we have that as a company car? I thought we had no pot to...
I've no idea, exactly.
To piddle in.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm told I went up to get a company car on... because our driver wasn't... Basically, the press box at Accrington only has 20 seats, and they rang us on the Friday and said, we can only accommodate two of you. So we had to bin off our driver. We had to go and ask for a company car, and we got a Merc, which was quite nice.
We were expecting a little Ford Focus, weren't we?
Yeah.
And then a nice black Merc.
You're rocking the Merc.
So that's why, for anyone that wondered why we pulled up in that. Andy, do you want to...
So you turn it... Accrington, I believe you said, goes on forever. was your description of Accrington as we drove through it.
The, so you, the town?
Yeah, so you arrive at Accrington and you are driving forever, just constantly, just driving through Accrington. Turn, when you do eventually get to the ground, turn off right onto the driveway, and then you've got this really quite narrow alley where you're kind of driving between some houses and the back of the stand. Must have your hazards on, Stu. Very important. They were very strict with that.
Yeah.
Driving through, dodging people.
So you were driving through the fans.
Yeah, essentially. Yeah. But, and there was a nice beer tent out the back where people had spilled out of that with some beers, and a group of Ipswich fans were there enjoying their beers. We needed to get through. You didn't want to honk your horn, but it was getting to the point where actually we maybe needed to honk the horn. Yeah. Then they turned around and they saw who's driving, didn't they?
Saw the face, didn't they?
They turned around and they saw this man at the wheel of his
Merc.
His flash
here
Merc.
He is.
And they parted, the sea parted.
Charlie Big Potatoes, yeah. Then through.
Steve, comes the chant.
Amazing.
Steve gave him a little
wave. Did you give him a little sort of regal?
I think it was a little nod, wasn't it?
Just a little nod.
Yeah. And then we're through.
You enjoyed that. That was probably highlight of the day.
Probably was.
To be fair, that's been the most enjoyable thing to talk about from that game.
Well, I think everybody probably actually really enjoyed their visit to Accrington, aside from, once again, the football.
Yeah, we spoke to a few fans beforehand, didn't we? And they said, this is what football's all about. You know, they had a few pints and it was, you know, you're close to the pitch. And I think they were saying that the Accrington chairman, Andy Holt, was kind of mingling very much amongst home and away fans afterwards, and it just felt like a family community football club, and everyone had a nice little day out. And as Andy said earlier, that I guess that's a bit of a glimpse into the near future for Ipswich Town. I mean, Accrington is probably one of the lesser grounds in that division, but maybe people might enjoy their away days to a few different types of grounds next year.
Yeah, definitely. That's the one guaranteed positive from potential relegation, is that, yeah, I think the away games will be at least interesting, not the same old place, but so much of it depends on the 90 minutes when you're there of how much you enjoy your day. And that's why they're there, sadly.
Exactly. And that's why the sort of the before the game, oh, this could be fun next year in League One, and then 90 minutes later, oh, this could be pretty miserable next year. That was the range of emotions.
Absolutely, a bit of a wake-up call, wasn't it, in that respect. Stu, let's move on. Let's move away from Accrington. Now, obviously, as we said, you did the 10-hour round trip on Saturday. You were back in here Sunday morning, and one of your main tasks on Sunday is to write the verdict, which is something that you agonise about, I know. Peeking behind the curtain, dear listeners, it's probably the most difficult thing you have to do all week, isn't it, write the verdict?
Yeah, I think once the final word of that's written and it's pushed to the internet and approved for the paper, that's probably my biggest sense of relief of the week, really, because I do agonise over what the correct tone is, what the right time is to say certain things. You're trying to... Andy and I always have long chats about it on the way home from grounds, and, you know, what's topical, what's the correct way to do things. And it just felt to me like after Saturday that the Evans thing had really come to the fore. Listen, what I wrote shouldn't be anything new or surprising to anyone. It's the same debate that's been going round and round in circles about Evans for a long time. Boils down to the fact that he's stuck with Ipswich just as much as Ipswich has stuck with them. But that's what people were talking about, and so I felt it was the right topic to tackle.
It was excellent read. If you've not read it, go online on the Anglian or the Star and read it now. Very good read indeed. And basically, the crux of what you were saying is obviously, Marcus, as much as he may want to get rid of the club, he can't until someone comes forward to buy it. But what he can do going forward is make sure that Lambert, or at least try and make sure that Lambert sticks around for the what's looking fairly inevitable drop to League One. And what happens from here on in is going to be key to what happens in the longer term.
Andy's used the phrase sort of managing the narrative, which I think is a really good one over these next few months. And I'm kind of going back on what I said in the last podcast and videos we did last week, in terms of it's kind of sensible for Ipswich not to waste a load of money at a lost cause now and maybe having half an eye on the future. Saturday made me think that actually what happens over the next few months is pretty important, and I think it's important that Ipswich finish this season without, they can't afford for this season to sort of unravel badly and finish with a whimper, because I would be concerned that Lambert might think, actually, I could do without this.
Mm.
We don't know for a fact that he's got a relegation release clause in that contract, but I wouldn't be surprised. Mm. So I think he probably, I think Lambert will have a decision to make himself, and I think it's vitally important that he is persuaded that this is a job worth sticking with going forwards, because without him,
it's rudderless, isn't it? Yeah. And you're starting again. And you're starting again. We've started again already once, well, twice really, in the summer, starting again, reboot. You're now doing that again at a lower level with bigger financial constraints, more issues to resolve off the pitch. What do they do then? I think you've got to go down with a plan kind of already in its infancy, beginning of how you're going to come back. Lambert will never say that he's given up on staying up this season, but he's talking about a rebuilding job, and he'll know that he can't rebuild Ipswich Town between now and May the 2nd or whenever the final day of the season is. That rebuilding job is huge. He said that it's maybe surprised him. He knew how big a task it was, but he's come in, and only then has he really seen how much needed doing. And I think you have to do everything you can to ensure that that rebuilding job, even if it involves coming back up from League One, starts now. Mm. And that's where Stu's getting at in terms of finance now, because that can both persuade Lambert, and he, you know what, if he did the deals right, he could even start building his team for the one that's going to come back.
As much as, playing devil's advocate here, as much as there's been a lot of love for Lambert, his record has not been great since he's arrived. I mean, it's comparable to Hurst, isn't it?
He's lost more games than Paul Hurst has done in fewer matches now.
Is there a point where you start to ask questions of him, and perhaps whether he's the right man for the job or not? I'm not saying I think either way.
I saw Simon Grayson on BT Sport. Have you seen this clip from the weekend where they were talking to him about the Sunderland documentary? And obviously the way that was, the narrative of that was, Grayson comes in, he plays the Paul Hurst role in that. They bring him in the summer. They sack him after 15 games, which is virtually the same as Hurst.
4 days before Hurst.
Yeah, so he was the Paul Hurst character, someone who came in, said loads of stuff needs to change here. He got sacked, and then Coleman came in, and he was the unlucky one, you know, because he took on the broken situation, and there wasn't a lot he could do more. And then he ultimately ends up leaving, and that's the concern, that Lambert sort of follows that route. But when does Lambert start? I think the style of football that they've played and the way he's connected with the fans has negated the results big time up until now. But what happens between now and the end of the season especially depends if he starts getting in 4, 5, 6 players this month, then that becomes the crux of his own team. Then only then I think you can really start to judge him.
I'd agree with that. I think you look at the manner of the losses to Bristol City and the manner of the losses to Millwall, where you've gone out heavily on the front foot. Lambert's gone out to win those games in desperate situations. Looked like it was going to happen, and then silly errors and silly goals have cost his team. But people are still coming away from those games having enjoyed the experience of the game, and I think that's where Lambert has done what is required of him in that regard. It's just the results just haven't come. Sue's right though. If you do put half of your own team in there and it does become your Ipswich Town, then that's where you get judged. My gut feeling is that I think he's the man that I would want managing Ipswich Town on the way down and then on the way back. But in terms of managing the narrative, it's a long old time until May, and there's a lot that can happen in that time to change that. Most of that is during the January transfer window, so we will see.
Without wishing heads to drop further, can I just ask, on a more general note, how the hell have we got to this point? Because I might give you my little background. I started here in 2003 as a young Cub reporter on the news desk, and back, obviously I was heavily interested in football back then and sport generally. And it was almost a given every year that Ipswich Town would contend for the playoffs and promotion. I remember fielding calls from West Ham fans after they'd beaten Town in the playoffs, seeing everyone's blowing bubbles down the phone to me. And then obviously moving back to when moving forward rather, to when Magilton was sacked. Town were eighth. They just beaten Norwich. The last time they beat Norwich in the derby. And now we're at this point where it's not even a surprise when they go out of the FA Cup to Accrington Stanley. They're rock bottom of the Championship.
And they are rock bottom.
Progressively getting worse. I mean, I know there was that blip where Mick completely defied the odds and took them into the playoffs. But it's been 10, 15 years of steady, grim, predictable, depressing decline.
Yeah, death by a thousand cuts. I mean, these were phrases that I was using, talking to the verdict pieces, 2 years ago, like death by a thousand cuts and sleepwalking towards League One. There's been a horrible, steady inevitability about this. It's just been a slow and steady decline. The attendance is dropping by a thousand year after year. And I don't know, you could pick it apart in so many ways, but I guess the overriding issue has been the owner. You know, it's been 10 years of... A lot of people are talking about the lack of investment from Evans, but perhaps that misses the point in terms of it's been the errors of judgment and perhaps his failure to learn from certain mistakes over the years. You've got managers now talking about, you know, why is the contract situations like Knudsen's and others been allowed to happen like this? You know, that's happened plenty of times in the past. Evans, in his few interviews, talked about, well, that won't happen again, like it did with McCauley and Leadbitter and so on, but we seem to be back at that situation again. Hindsight's a wonderful thing. You can look at it now and say, well, he's bad managerial appointments, but there was excitement when Keane was appointed. I think most people looked at Jules' CV when he was first appointed and thought he was a reasonable appointment. Hurst, even in the summer, everyone was sort of fully behind this different approach, young and hungry manager. Hindsight's a wonderful thing. They haven't worked out, but it's been a catalogue of bad decisions made over time that's led us to this.
And football has changed. If you're talking about 2003, just think of how much football has changed in that time. It's so much more about money and investment, even in the Championship. Ipswich in 2003, fresh out of administration, those teams were built on Joe Rule, as in his words, juggling dust and sort of getting a team together on the cheap, even then, was not to the extent, maybe in relative terms as to now, but doing it then, football's just moved on. Mm. And Marcus Evans can't afford to compete now. And Ipswich Town, we talk about being in the place where you should be. Who was it that said? Paul Hurst, I think, said that if you look at budgets and investment, the league generally ends up
as it
looking
is.
Like that. And
yeah, the financial landscape is, if Evans knew now, you know, when he came to the club, I'm sure he wouldn't have bought the club, because it's just exploded financially with the TV money and the mega money at the top, which has not filtered down to Ipswich. You know, while other clubs have yo-yoed and got stronger financially, Ipswich have struggled to keep pace. You're getting less money through the gate. You're not getting your slice of the TV money and the parachute payments. And Evans, like it or not, has said that he's got a limit as to how much he wants to invest every year.
We were talking about Norwich this morning, weren't we? Who are kind of one of, in terms of owners, like in terms of the wealth of the ownership of the club, is probably one of the smallest in the Championship, you'd probably say. But they've had promotions. They've managed to get the teams together, get promotions at vital times on numerous occasions, and that's funded the club. One promotion, obviously you get the jackpot of your first year there, and then there's, what is it, three years after that? So you're funding your club for 4 years based on one good season, and Ipswich just haven't ever got themselves over the line to get that, like in the early
days. And that's why Evans has been clinging on, because he's just been waiting for, you know, in the hope that, well, I can swallow this for 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years, because 1 year... bang, you know, that's virtually all wiped out.
Yeah.
But the longer that's gone on, the further away that's looking. I think he's at the stage now where he's thinking, well, this is looking farther away than ever before.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to take my medicine and walk away. But it's not just as simple as walking away. You need someone that's prepared to take it off your hands.
Well, can I pose one more question then before we try and lighten it up with a big question?
This isn't the,
because I'm aware for the listeners, it's probably quite a depressing listen today, because we are all feeling a little bit under the weather, Stu especially, sporting All Black. So that's how we got here. This is how we've got to this point. We're a town at the lowest point, arguably, since 1957. What next then? How do you take this once great club, which is just a few metres away from us here in our studio, and turn it back into... Well, can you ever turn it back into what it was? Can you ever compete again?
Well, define compete. Yeah.
Well, can you get back to that point where I started that, my story, 2003, 2004, when it was a given pretty much every year the Ipswich were going to be in the promotion shake-up. Of the championship. Let's go with that to begin with.
Of course you can, because you you can look at other clubs that have done that. So, you know, Norwich went down to the third tier, Southampton went down to the third tier, Leicester have been down to the third tier, come back and won the Premier League in the time that the Ipswich have been in the championship. So, of course, teams can come back stronger. But for every one of those examples, there's probably two that have got stuck or gone even further back. And
there's such a long list of them. Some of them have their own exceptional circumstances, don't they? Like ownership stuff, like Portsmouth and Coventry. But then there's what, Swindon, Bradford, Oldham, all in the Premier League. I've been in the Premier League. Who else is there that's down there? Charlton, which is probably a good example for a club like Ipswich, because at times Charlton and Ipswich have been sort of up and down with each other. Sheffield United have been down to come back. Sheffield Wednesday, there's so many.
Yeah, and Sheffield Wednesday, Forest, Leeds, Sheffield United, they took a long time to get back out of League One, some of those clubs, and their fan base is bigger. And so, therefore, financially, it won't have been as big a blow to them as it will be to Ipswich, because the further down the pyramid you go, the more heavily you rely on your gate receipts and what comes in through the door, because the TV money and the solidarity payments and all of that drops. You know, and Ipswich's attendances have been dwindling. If they were to take another hit, and there's no guarantee that they would, because that will come down to how they price the season tickets and what the mood is surrounding the club. But they could feel the pinch big time next year, and you know, you could easily see them becoming one of those clubs that maybe finds, dare I say, its natural level. I really hope that's not the case. But
so is it as simple as, essentially, unless the owner changes, that Town are kind of stuck in this spiral of decline? I'll leave you to consider that, because I just need to pop out for a second.
Where's he off to?
Are you coming back?
We'll be back shortly, yeah.
Are you using to talk amongst ourselves, or...?
Yeah, go on. Yeah.
Okay. See you later. What do you think of Mark?
He's needed his keys. Yeah, so Evans and that. Switch.
Bye, mate.
See you in a bit.
So the question is... Unless Evans goes, Town can't compete.
And then you're just leaving us to it.
Well, yeah, you discuss that. I'll be back in a minute.
Alright.
Okay.
Bye.
Yeah, Mark Heath.
I don't know what I think of him.
Is he a good boss? I don't know.
I was going to ask him for some kind of pay increase. I don't know what... You've worked with him longer than me. Is that likely?
I can't see it, mate, to be quite honest. I don't think now's the time to ask.
I know. Do you think we can move forward as a company while Mark Heath is still in charge?
Well, I mean, all the talk is about one of us going, but to be quite honest, I think we need to put Mark in the poll as well.
Under the microscope. It's at times like these where leaders come under the microscope, isn't it? And that's what's going on with Evans. Let's talk about Evans. I think Mark's just gone for a wee.
I didn't know if he was coming back with some sort of surprise for us, but I think he is just genuinely gone to the toilet. We can cut all this bit out, that's fine.
Or we could leave it in. Evans, I can see Ipswich Town being able to bounce back to the championship under Marcus Evans, but you're going to come back and you're still going to be the poor relation finance-wise under Marcus Evans. The hope has to be, if Evans is still the owner, you go down, build a team and come up as a real team, like we've seen with Blackburn, Wigan to a lesser extent. But Blackburn especially, I remember you saying on the opening day that this lot are a team, aren't they? Mm. They're a team because they've played together for 2 years. The hope is that Ipswich can do that, I guess. But
yeah, momentum, isn't it? Ipswich have got, I think this is the big, losing is a bad habit, and Ipswich have kind of had that cloud hanging over them for quite some time. And, you know, if you have one sort of joyous year where you're winning more games more often than not, and that becomes then the new habit, and that becomes a very powerful tool, and that can overcome the investment issues, hopefully, once you come back up again. You know, Norwich and Southampton had the back-to-back promotions, mm-hmm. and I'm sure that wasn't just down to investment, that was down to sort of getting that positive momentum, and that has to be the hope for Ipswich Town.
Mm. I just worry that any kind of summer rebuild is just going to take all that. If we're going, this is what the point is about Lambert, I guess. If you're going into any kind of summer rebuild and having to do that all over again, it's really hard. You're going in with no momentum. Mm. You're having to start from a standing start.
Here he is.
You all right? Chaps, go for a little cry.
It was
overwhelming. So what was the? What did we?
Did you just go out into the street and just shout to the heavens?
No! Why?
Why?
Yeah, so what did that. We? What did we decide?
Without going over it all again.
Mm.
It's hard. You'd come back to the Championship and find you'd still be in the same financial level, but you might come with more momentum. That's essentially what we said.
Okay. Well, that's a pretty heavy first half of the podcast.
Yeah.
Let's hit the Mark's Big Question button to try and liven things up.
I'm pressing it.
Mark's Big Question.
Question.
I should really record this so we don't have to do it each time.
It's better live.
Do you like doing it live?
Who picked last time? I think it was Stu, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Andy. Number between 1 and 33.
11.
Already done that.
Oh. You need to be removing. You need to be removing
what
these.
It take?
23.
Ooh, that's a good one. Best decision you ever made. Now, don't say immediately, having my beautiful daughter, because obviously that goes without, that's without question. The best decision you've ever made in your life is?
Best decision I ever made was moving out of a shared house that I was living in the Worcestershire town of Redditch and moving into Birmingham in 2009.
Okay.
Because it was a miserable experience, but very, very cheap. And I was living quite a good lifestyle in my first reporter's job, this was.
It, what was a miserable experience? Living in Birmingham?
Yeah. No, living in Birmingham was amazing.
Oh, okay.
But living in what I would describe as the armpit of the West Midlands.
So what job were you doing then? What was your...
I was a news and sport reporter at the Worcester Standard newspaper.
Was that your first job?
That was my first job, and it was incredibly poorly paid.
Okay.
But to kind of make that work, I lived in a really bad shared house environment with a man who owned the house. Can't remember his name, but he was very strange. Wore a very short dressing gown. An Irish girl who was nice enough. And this lad from Sheffield, me and him just used to go and watch Villa on Sundays sometimes.
So did
for a
you...
laugh. But moving into Birmingham was great.
And that was not combined with the job move, that was still doing the same job.
Yeah, but I decided to commute to it instead. And I really enjoyed living in Birmingham. And to disappoint you, Mark, that's where I kind of reconnected with the woman who is now my wife.
Why is that disappointing?
Because you didn't want any of that kind of stuff.
Is.
You wanted
nice.
bought a car, mate.
No. Just it'd be too easy to say the best decision I ever made was to have a child, because that's what everyone would say, I'm sure, who's a parent.
smile and nod, Stu.
Yeah. So that's yours, Andy. That's the best decision you ever made to make that move. And things took an upturn.
Yep.
From that point on?
Yep.
Outstanding. Stu?
Last week I got the sub of the day from Subway, chicken pizziola, and that was an excellent decision.
No, you didn't. Meat Feast, mate.
Meat Feast, was it?
Yeah.
Okay. That was a great decision, because I very much enjoyed it.
What's
the best decision I made? You like this story, so I'll tell this one. Probably not going to grammar school when I had the option to go to grammar school.
You could have gone to grammar
school. We've never talked about this on the podcast. Stewie had the opportunity to go to a posh toff school.
So the
they
boys,
have them in Essex.
Right.
Yeah.
So there was an exam called the 11 plus.
Oh yeah.
Right. Yeah. And you boys didn't believe that there's an exam called the 11 plus, and that's whether it gets you into like a grammar school or not. So
I believe there used to be. But you're the same age as me, pretty
much. Yeah, it still did exist. It was an optional whether to sit it, and my parents, my pushy parents, made me sit it. Yeah. And I kind of passed it, but I was on the cusp. I was in the lower percentile, and they said, you can go to one, but I had to travel a little bit further out. Kegs in Chelmsford, I was allowed to go to.
Kegs.
They wore a proper posh uniform. It's like a purple jacket, and it was a... And my parents, to be fair, said, you can go or you don't have to. You can just go to your usual sort of state school.
We should say, in your office, when Sue first told this story about 11 plus, it was treated roundly with derision because, as far as I was aware, the 11 plus was phased out like in the 1960s. But then it occurred, a few weeks later, I was listening to something on the radio or reading something, and it did say that 11 plus is still used.
Is it?
In places in the country. So yeah. Your story stood up. You were indeed
so
brainy
I turned it down. I said, "No, I want to go to school with my mates and pick a can about the playground."
Do you
remember
what might have happened had you gone to a
school? You would never have ended up being a sports journalist if you'd gone there.
You'd have been everything else kind of followed off the back of that, and probably one of my best decisions.
Can you imagine this brass clerk in a posh school wearing a blazer and a tie?
I wouldn't have fitted in, would I?
No, you wouldn't.
White geese? Yeah. The best decision I ever made.
Stu and his best mate Tarquin.
Yeah, Leopold. The best decision I ever made was dropping out of university. I went to university. I think it was. I'm not sure if you felt like this, but basically it was the thing that was expected of you. If you got half decent A level results, you go to university. That's what you do. I never really thought anything of it. I went to university for a year. I thought I wanted to be a sports psychologist. Turns out the course was far more science based than I was actually interested in, a lot of biology and stuff.
Where did you go?
I went to De Montfort Sports
Bedford.
Bedford, yeah. Since mothballed and knocked down, sad times. But that year was probably the biggest mistake of my life. I spent a lot of money, I got into debt I didn't need to, and I took the decision to drop out. Went and did some work experience, I decided I wanted to be a journalist. Went and did some work experience at the Grey Free Press. Was offered a job, and that was it.
And now you're on the throne.
And now I'm tremendously successful and wealthy. I would say to anyone out there who feels like they have to go to university because that's what you do, it doesn't have to be the way. You have to think about what you want to do, and ultimately, if it's not right for you, it's not right for you. And be brave enough to make that decision, because it was a tough decision. My parents hated me. They hated the decision.
Disappointment, quietly disappointed.
Exactly. It was that kind of look you get from parents, like, are you sure that you want to do this sort of thing? And going back to your thing about your job being not very well paid in journalism, when I started out as a journalist at Grey Free Press, the year 2000, I was paid £8,000 a year.
Eight grand a year. I thought my 12 was pathetic.
£8,000 a year.
Yeah.
I lived mostly on pasta, frozen waffles and peas, and I went down to about 9.5 stone.
Pasta, is that as one meal?
Yeah.
And you derived
the bacon. Things have changed, my friend. I used to chain smoke back then as well, which probably wasn't that good. Anyway, so we've had moving house, not going to a posh school, and dropping out of university. Excellent. Good. Let's move on, shall we, to potential positives. Transfers. Will Keane, Callum Alder already in the door. We've got this new link to Huddersfield striker, is it? How do you pronounce his name?
Quaver.
Quaver?
No, Quainar.
Quainar. What do you know about him?
Like Quasar.
What's his goal scoring record? Is it as impressive as Will Keane's?
Off the top of my head, I think it's a bit better than Will Keane's.
He's not prolific, let's put it that way.
Good.
He's,
that's what you want.
He's a big guy, he's 6'3", but he's very well built. On the face of it, you'd think he was the physical target man, but I think he's, from what I gather, more of a wide forward. Huddersfield signed him. He's German. They signed him from German club Union Berlin midway through their promotion season. There's a bit of a sort of a January boost that year. He's kind of been a sometimes starts, quite often off the bench type player for them since then. So he's had some reasonable Premier League experience, but this year is very much down the pecking order. He's only been off the bench twice this year. And from what we gather, he's very much on Lambert's list.
I think they could do with a wide forward, if I'm honest. I quite like the idea of
wide.
Both kinds of wide. Yes, your mate from the kickboxing gym.
Yeah.
just with Grant Ward injured, Gwion Edwards not giving Lambert an awful lot, that leaves Jack Lancaster as sort of the right forward, and I don't think in an ideal world Lambert would want to be doing that week in, week out. Some experience, a bit of size and a route to goal from wide positions is something I think they could do with.
Is there any other kind of rumblings on the transfer front?
Anthony Pilkington.
Yeah.
Who Lambert signed for Norwich. Similarly down the pecking order at Cardiff in the Premier League, someone who was part of their promotion in the Championship. Still only 30, I believe. Versatile. We kind of know him primarily as a winger, but I know he's been a sort of a makeshift forward at stages for Cardiff, so he'd be another one to come in. And you know, we've been talking about Freddie not having his shooting boots on in the last couple of games. That's a little bit of maybe competition for him down the left. You could play him through the middle if you really wanted to. So again, that sounds like negotiations there are reasonably advanced. So I could see that happening this week.
And in terms of outgoing, we don't reckon Jonas Knudsen's ever going to play for Town again, do we?
Don't think he travelled to Accrington at the weekend, which is unusual because Ipswich take quite large travelling groups with them. He wasn't. I don't think he was there on this occasion. It's hard to see a route back into the team from him if you've dropped him out of the side in favour of Miles Kenlock and then you've brought in another left back on top of that. But in what scenario does Jonas come back in?
Goodbye, Mad Dog. Let's get on to mailbag now, because you're off to watch the under-23 play in less than an hour. I'm aware we've already been going on a little bit. Stu's getting more and more depressed, it seems.
So I look depressed, sorry.
You look, what's the word depressed? Browbeaten, Let's start first of all with friend of the show, Brian Wren. Is he a friend of the show?
Brian's a friend of mine.
Absolutely. He says, did we pull the trigger too quickly on Keno? I say yes and always have thought that. Stats don't lie. And then he follows it up with Keane had gained 22 wins in the calendar year previously. He had 13 wins so far that season. And he got into the semi-finals of the League Cup against Arsenal. And attendances were over 25,000.
I guess it's all relative, isn't it? Because I think as the decline has gone on, all of the former managers now, their probably records are standing up. You know, you go back to Jim, were they far too quick? It seems faintly ridiculous. And I'm fully aware that this was before my time, but I'm fully aware that people say that the newspaper played our part in wanting more, you know, in expecting more when Jim Magilton went. You know, they were eighth in the league at that stage. And
just beating Norwich at home.
So that looks ridiculous. You know, you could go through each of the managers and say, well, the situation has got worse since then. I wasn't in the thick of it when Keane was manager here, but that seemed to be very much a broken relationship by that point. There was the shush gesture to the crowd as he came off after that last game. Andy?
I was busy covering rugby at this point. I didn't pay an awful lot of attention to Ipswich Town.
Yeah.
My memory of it was that a kind of his face and Ipswich Town's history and his approach to things never really united as one.
It was incredibly exciting when he was unveiled.
Absolutely.
I mean, everyone was basically like, well, we're up then, we're up.
Yeah, he'd done the exact same thing.
He'd taken Sunderland to promotion.
I talk to people now that were involved at that time around the club, and his name is almost like Voldemort. You're not even allowed to speak it now, you know. It's the mood around the place was just horrible, you know, treading on eggshells. You could just feel it in the air. And wasn't a great place for people to work at that time because of the way that Roy operated. From what I gather, that had reached its natural conclusion. I think, you know, if you look at Evans, he'd probably given most of his managers a lot longer than other owners would have done. You know, I think Jewell could have gone a lot sooner than he did, but he wanted to make absolutely sure.
Started, this wasn't in the season that he went, but he started a season without winning a game before Halloween, didn't he? And then you look at Paul Hurst, who was similar length of time and lost his job.
Yeah. We've got loads of questions today, perhaps unsurprisingly, so let's try and take one at a time. Andy, Stephen Fuchs says, I get the feeling everyone is waiting to see if we get quality in the transfer window. If not, I think the crowd might turn big time on Evans and it could get toxic. We are down. I can't see us winning 10 games with some draws out of 20 games left, I'm afraid. So it's not so much a question there as a statement that things could turn toxic.
Well, that's what we've been talking about, isn't it? Well, I can't see them winning 10 of 20 games when they won 8 in the entirety of 2018. And we've talked already on this episode about managing the narrative, and part of that managing the narrative is to do with the crowd mood. And you can absolutely see that changing if the narrative isn't going right as well as stuff on the pitch, it'll change.
Stewie, Connor Hume, which members of the squad will need to be offloaded for us to meet the strict wage limit next season? And do you think next year, or after this year, we have a chance of keeping Flynn Downs in the summer?
I don't think it will be the massive fire sale that people fear, because as Andy has alluded to in other stuff, I think most of the contracts, or all of the contracts, will have hefty relegation clauses in them that will reduce those wages by quite a bit. Loans will expire, contracts will expire. The only real financial millstones around their neck is probably Bill Koski, who signed a bumper new deal last summer. Emir Hughes possibly as well, but I don't think they're going to be in a financial pickle. What was the second part of the question?
Flynn
Downs.
Flynn, I'm sure there will be a few vultures circling for some of the younger players.
Yeah. If I was... We talked about Andre, didn't we, in the last one of these. If I was a Premier League club taking a punt on a young kid, Andre would be the one. If I was a upper-end Championship club looking to pick something out of the wreckage of Ipswich Town, Flynn would be the one that I would be looking to do that with. I think he's the more complete Championship ready player out of those, aside from the issues that we talked about in terms of yellow cards taking the edge off of him. I think he needs to work on that, but I think he's been fantastic.
Dimitri's for Hutchman. Evans seems to be getting all the criticism since the Accrington game, but should the players and Lambert not be taking the brunt from this one? Regardless of Evans not spending, the team that played at Accrington should have won. Salaries and transfer fees show that.
Yeah, it's, you can make a point there. Pound for pound, you know, that all of the excuses about budget and that kind of should fall by the wayside, really. I think the point about players taking responsibility is a big one, actually. And perhaps they were able to hide behind Hurst. And as I've said in previous things, there was a lot of player power involved in kind of Hurst leaving in the end. Players contacting Evans directly and, you know, not happy with being made to run and double gym sessions and all that side of things. Well, now Chambers and lots of other players are saying how great Lambert is. Well, you know, they need to step up to the plate a little bit more as well. They can't just hide behind managers forever.
James, are people mad that we lost to a League One side in the FA Cup because it's like the latest in a series of bad events? In reality, I think we all expected to lose that tie.
I think that's exactly right. I don't think everybody expected them to lose, but it is certainly just another reminder of where Ipswich Town is at the moment. And I think the fact that that wasn't particularly surprising, the loss, is again sort of highlighted just how far Ipswich have fallen and how much further there is to potentially fall over the next few months.
Yeah, good question here, Stu. Kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier from Martin Bosanquet. I think that's how you pronounce it. He says,
Bosanquet,
okay. Good name. He says, basically, any talk of a right-back coming in at all, Lambert's made a big thing about ensuring coverage through the door for the possible departure of Knudsen, but he seems to see Spencer only right-back and hasn't seemed to look for any cover in that position.
No names floating about at the moment. That's something that I'll be asking Lambert this week in the press conference about, you know, having one option at right back, and is that
he's
an
got
area
to be looking at? You can't see a scenario where he's not looking, surely, for that position.
It's strange. There's been no links, though, isn't it? As you say, because he's obviously decided that Donastian's
Jenkinson's
not
one name from a right back point of view at Arsenal, who's had some loan spells, who's been mentioned. Is he at Arsenal? Or did he go?
Yeah, he's at Arsenal.
He went on loan to West Ham, didn't he?
And Birmingham as well.
But I haven't heard anything more on that one. But yeah, well, he said all areas of the pitch, so I assume that includes right back. I can't see Josh Emmanuel being recalled to play. Lambert's sort of said you'd be recalling kids to help kids.
Elder Grizzly on that note says, Dinashian's been our most solid fullback when played. Any idea if Lambert has issues with him from Villa? He certainly hasn't looked a centre-back when played, and that feels like a convenient excuse, but we know, I mean, off the record, behind the scenes, we're not aware of any kind of falling out between the two, are we?
He praises professionalism when ever speaking about him.
Doesn't seem to fancy him, really.
Slightly puzzling, as we said earlier, that one.
The pin. Like the pin. Gents, as we are currently achieving new low after new low, what's been your lowest point covering town?
Do you know what? In a strange way, it's not been this season. I would say it was the season before. I would say the end game of Mick, the last 6 months of that, certainly from a working perspective, took its toll on me probably more than this, because it was so grey, it was so nothing, it was just such a groundhog day, apathy, nil-nils, no shots on target towards the end of the games, and people had just lost interest in it, and that's the only slither of a silver lining here, is that people are engaged again and people care again and people are hurting again. And I would say that last 6 months of Mick, going into every press conference, are you going to stay, are you going to go, and that just seemed to drag on forever, and you could just feel the divisiveness amongst the fan base grow, and that wasn't a fun time.
I've only been covering them for 18 months and it's been thoroughly miserable.
It's been low. Fenton Brett says, give it to Giggsy until the end of the season, then bring back Mick McCarthy.
Yeah, yep.
Absolutely. Ben Maguire, given the change of tone from Lambeau post-Accrington, how likely is it that somewhere along the line he loses faith with Marcus Evans and leaves? That's the worry, isn't it? Ross Wishart, would you say that Evans stating that he would sell in the pre-season video interview is effectively him opening the door? One would imagine he's also put feelers out prior to that. What's more concerning is the lack of any interested party. Yes, I mean, we've said several times that he would sell.
Depends whether he's proactively looking for a buyer. That part we don't know. Whether he's just waiting for someone to come forward or whether he's instructing people to find a buyer, that we don't know.
Jack Phillips asked again about the Nashim, which we already covered. Thanks anyway for your question, Jack. Ed Barker, are we really a worse side now than the last one put out by Jewel?
I'd have to look at that team on paper, but similar situation where you're heavily reliant on loans.
Difference to that was they were more experienced players, weren't they? They were like championship players that didn't care. That was the problem with that team, wasn't it?
Far older team now. I think you've got better younger players now.
Benjamin Bloom, friend of the show? Friend of yours.
He's a friend of mine. He's a friend of yours, isn't he, Shu?
Yeah.
I like Butney too.
Butney.
Mark, how do we stop our ratings falling off a cliff after relegation? Will your bosses still expect the same amount of traffic when Stu and Andy are writing about Scunthorpe and Rochdale, not Leeds and Villa?
I've got a question for Ben.
Yes?
Ben, my friend, I doubt many people have seen more championship games of football this season than you. Will you be leaving the championship behind and coming with Ipswich to League One, or are you going to still be doing championship preview shows, championship prediction shows, championship reviews? Are you being relegated as well? Do you come with Ipswich, or do you stand as the second tier god that you are?
Let us know, Ben. But in terms of your question, are we still expecting the same amount of traffic when Stu and Andy are writing about Scunthorpe and Rochdale, not Leeds and Villa? The answer is yes, Ben. We're expecting more.
I'm sure some will fall away, but do people stop caring about Ipswich Town?
It's
not about the opposition.
The interest will be the same. And potentially more. Depends what happens.
Does that mean we both keep our jobs?
Well, I don't want to go into any of those details for HR reasons.
Can you just give us a commitment right here, right now, that neither of us would lose our jobs?
The pin says...
Doesn't have to be a commitment, but just say that you'll think about it.
The pin says, as Steve favours women's jeans, what has been your biggest fashion faux pas?
When I was at sixth form, big up Coppleston, I went through a stage, and I do not know why, where I used to wear three items of beige clothing all at the same time. Both, I had this beige jumper which I really liked. It was really, I thought it was really smart. Like everybody else, yeah. I thought it was smart. I had some like darker but still beige trousers, and I also had some beige shoes. So there was an occasion where I looked like some kind of like
hash brown.
Amazon Explorer or a hash brown.
What was that influenced by? That
fashion.
Fashion. I don't remember beige being particularly in fashion.
Well, it wasn't, but it was my idea of that. And I can vividly remember realising halfway through a day that you're wearing top to bottom beige. Yeah. What are you doing?
Have you ever done the jeans, double denim?
No, I've never owned a denim jacket of any kind.
You can do the triple, can't you? The jean shirt.
Is that back in now? Is that,
I don't know. The jean shirt.
You must have seen jean shirts.
Like a shirt,
I've not got a denim shirt.
Yeah, denim.
Yeah.
Then you can team it with jeans and a jean jacket. Why would you really rock it? The jean hat as well.
The jean hat.
Absolutely. We've all done that, haven't we?
Yeah.
Stewie, what's your biggest fashion point?
Probably crimes against hair, as I've said before.
That would be mine as well.
Yeah. Faux hawk around the Beckham time.
Did you really?
I didn't shave the sides, but I kind of used gel to kind of get it up into a little peak in the middle. And then I had the straighteners out all the time when I had longer hair, and hence why I've been punished with it all falling out.
Mine would definitely be hair. I had, well, both on my head and my eyebrows. I had lines in my eyebrows, I had lines in my hair, I had a skinhead. I dyed it blonde around the time of Eminem becoming a thing. I had some rascal haircuts back in the day.
I saw there was a picture recently of the Man United team going on a night out around the early noughties, and the clothes they were all wearing, and it was getting completely ridiculed. It's Nistelrooy, Ferdinand, Scholes, all of that lot, and I thought, yeah, that's how I dressed then.
Yeah. Me and my brother saw a lad. I think we were in Nando's actually before Christmas. He just looked like he was dressed out of the 90s. All of his clothes were so big.
Yeah.
And he had the curtains. It was great.
To be fair, I've seen like a few kids walking around wearing shell suits and stuff now. It seems that kind of thing is back in. But also, as you say, I used to buy clothes around the time that I had blonde hair that were literally the biggest clothes I could buy. Like, yeah, double XL.
FUBU. Yeah. You wearing FUBU?
I had FUBU. I had Woo. Do you remember Woo Wear?
Yeah.
Woo Wear. I had a Woo Wear top, which is, you know, triple XL. I was wearing a tent. Not good times in the year.
I used to customise my jeans when I first went to uni, and that you'd buy a pair of jeans and then you'd cut loads of holes in them and put safety pins and throw a bit of bleach on them and stuff like that. Yeah.
Now they're selling them pre-made.
I want to see a picture of Stu with a faux hawk.
I've had the same hair since forever.
Since birth.
I've been this tall since I was 15.
Were you quite big for a 15-year-old then?
I was on pace.
Yeah.
And then I just stopped. Then I stopped growing.
Boys, that's the end of mailbag. There's not been a lot of laughs in today's podcast. It's feeling a bit downbeat. I'm pleased that we got that question from the pin about fashion, because that actually put a smile on our faces for the first time today. You're off now to go and watch the under-23s.
Yep.
They're playing
Bristol City, I think.
We know that the likes of Nydam and Dawkins are playing.
I think Dawkins is playing, yeah.
Yeah. So that report will be online this afternoon. It's Monday, if you listen to this. Also, the two of you will probably do some video post-match with your thoughts.
Most probably.
Will you be wearing a coat?
No.
Good. Stewie?
I will be wearing a coat, yeah.
You'll be able to see that Stewie's also all clad in black, like an undertaker today.
Do you remember what I said to you in the car about the video that I'd do if Ipswich managed to stay up?
Oh, yeah. And so, yeah, we get this promise on air. So people have pointed out rightly that Andy looked like he did the video topless.
Yeah.
And I relayed this to him while he was driving, and he said, if they stay up, I will actually do one topless.
For real? Well, that's out there now.
Well, what will happen is, if they manage to stay up, I'll put the poll out there. Do you want me to do it topless?
Yeah. Is there an appetite?
If there's an appetite, I'll do it.
This is a bit like the Lineker. I'll do it in my pants if Leicester win the league, isn't it? Similar kind of standing.
What odds are Ipswich now to stay up? It's probably not 5,000 to 1, is it?
I'm going to raise your stakes. Oh. If Ipswich stay up, I'll do it stark bollock naked. There you go.
Well, it's a bit weird. So we're going to do this at the same time. I'm going to keep my trousers on.
You're going to be naked.
Yeah.
Why don't you do it bottomless?
People are like screaming now. I really hope they go down.
So you heard it here first. If Town do the unthinkable, pull off the greatest single escape from relegation in Championship history, Stuart Steve Watson we'll do a video stark bollock naked.
Nobody wants that.
What kind of video? Like,
yeah, what kind of video?
What are you doing?
Just like our, you know, just our post-match verdict things. Oh, right. Still
so
standing there
with the microphone. So if they stay up on the final day against Leeds,
yeah,
it's just going to be a naked. The video will just be done naked. Is that video
amongst the Leeds fans?
Yeah. What was the tattoo thing, by the way?
Oh,
that we said at the start of the season.
That was the Norwich game, wasn't it?
You were going to get somebody's name and number tattooed on your back.
I've avoided that one.
Yeah.
Whose was it?
It was whoever scored the winner.
Whoever scored
Norwich.
The winner.
But obviously that didn't
happen. That's fine.
So, as I say,
carry over to Carrow Road, by the way, just to make that clear.
Just for the record, if Town stay up, Stu's going to get naked and Andy's going to get topless.
Well, I just now seem like I put myself out there first.
Andy's
now
also going to get naked.
Raise the stakes higher.
They're both going to do the video naked.
I'll do it naked as well.
And then they're going to kiss. They're going to kiss at the end.
What's going on?
Well, I'm pleased we're laughing anyway at the end of the podcast. It's good. It's good to finish like this. Any other business chats?
No other business.
Stuart Watson, say goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Soon to be naked. Andy Brown, say goodbye.
Soon to be naked.
They're off to get naked and kiss in practice, in rehearsal.
No, we're not. Kissing,
we need hits, man. We need hits. Come on.
That won't get the hits.
Yeah, well, we'll see. Just the shock factor. I've been Mark Heath, and we'll speak to you again soon. Naked.
Wow, where did that...